Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I am continuing my recent tradition of inviting guests back for yet another episode with me, and many of them have accepted the invitation. Some have said, you know what, talking to you once is enough, Scott. Thank you. Please remove my email from your contact list. But James Thompson tolerated me enough to be on yet again. So thank you, James, for joining me.
The last time was a genuine pleasure, even though I came to it with a certain degree of trepidation. I was not the top tier Star Trek fan that you had previously been talking to. I'm always happy to talk about silly television shows.
Now, before we delve into the silliness, James, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Some people will know me as an iOS app developer who makes a thing called Peacock. Other people will have heard me possibly on Total Party Kill and other such podcasts, but there's not that much to tell, really.
Yes, you are. I don't want to steal your thunder here, but you are an avid D&D player now, I think, after kind of having an interest and not having much opportunity to play. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I played in the 80s, and then there was a period of, well, shall we say, 30 plus years where I did not play any D&D. And I have been like playing on and off for the last couple of years through the Total Party Kill stuff. That is actually, it's turned out to be a lot of fun. And I have, out of that, developed a dice rolling app and filled my office with a variety of dice as well.
The episode that we are going to be talking about is a Deep Space Nine episode, a late season Deep Space Nine episode, seventh season, in fact, the last season of Deep Space Nine. Episode 5, and it's always, I guess I should say the name, Chrysalis. It's always interesting to me to watch a season 7 episode of Deep Space Nine, because, as you know, later seasons of Deep Space Nine are very serialized, and yet they have episodes like this that are kind of unconnected to any overarching story. We do, I guess this does connect to the whole, you know, Dr. Bashir's genetically engineered, and he has some friends called, I don't know what to describe them as, other genetically engineered people that he knows that have been in a previous episode. So that it does harken back to a previous episode. But this episode really does nothing to move forward the Dominion War story. It's more of a character piece about Dr. Bashir.
Yeah, I mean, I think I may have said this last time I was on, that I kind of started out as a fan of Babylon 5, but there was a point towards the end of both of those shows where the quality of DS9 improved dramatically and the quality of Babylon 5 decreased rapidly. Mm-hmm. And, there are many classic Deep Space Nine episodes towards the end of the show, and this is not one of them.
This is an episode towards the end of the show. Yeah, it's an interesting episode because it's dealing with a couple of potentially sensitive subjects, let's say. And we were slacking on the Incomparable Slack before we watched this episode, because we've both seen it before. But revisiting it to talk about it, you need to watch it again. Well, I guess you don't need to, but it would be a very fruitless conversation, probably. And you, I watched it last night. You watched it probably a little before me and sent a message saying, oh, I wonder if this holds up. And the question I have to you is, did this episode hold up, James?
I do not think that it... Well, okay. I think as an episode of television, it is okay. It's fine. I think the themes that it is trying to engage with, it's... Let us say that watching it in a sort of post-Me Too environment, or even, just it's bad. I mean, it's like, the basic plot is Bashir tries to use medical science to make himself a girlfriend again. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not like the, as we said, the characters were in the statistical probabilities episode of season 6. This sort of quartet of genetically engineered highly intelligent, but damaged in various ways, characters. And it's not the most nuanced depiction of mental illness to begin with. Mm-hmm. But then you layer on top of it the sort of... I mean, I've seen some people say that this is a wonderful love story, and I cannot see that in it currently. I was watching this episode, and I'd rewatched Deep Space Nine, you know, not terribly long ago, you know, like 5-6 years ago, and it was just one that kind of sailed past me, I think, at the mm-hmm. time. And you know, it's not like things have dramatically changed in 5 or 6 years. It was probably bad then, and I was just not paying attention. But mm-hmm.
I think certainly for some segments, and myself included, our awareness of these issues is much greater than it was before. The issues always existed. It was that we were able to blissfully live our life without having to think about them too much, which is a problem. And and it's a good thing that we're talking about these issues and realizing that they're much more widespread than ever. And this episode, on the one hand, so I'm trying to say these things because these are topics that are sensitive to folks, and I want to make sure that I don't say anything bad, but if I do, I have a blanket apology for anything that I say that is off base, and no, I'm coming at it from a good place. But this episode, I do feel like, is basically Dr. Bashir is lonely. He thinks that this person is perfect for him, so he will fix her, and then she will be his, which is not great. I do feel like it was very lightly peppered throughout the episode, where everybody else was kind of like, I don't know if you should be doing this, Dr. Bashir. That's good, I guess. I don't know.
I think, yeah, I mean, not to jump all the way to the end, but, you know, once he has a realization that perhaps he had not behaved in the most admirable fashion, you know, Miles just kind of goes, well, you were lonely, in a sort of, well, that's okay then.
In that case, it's fine.
And, yeah, so... And the other thing that struck me with this episode, just, you know, as we're layering everything in, is like almost the first line is Bashir saying, oh, cheeky virus, you've gone and mutated on.
Yes.
And it's like, as we write this in February, or write this, as we speak this in February 2021, it's like, oh, that's not a line that I like.
Yeah, I wrote that down as well, and I was like, oh boy, this is supposed to be escapism, Deep Space Nine, how dare you?
Yes.
And the other thing I noticed as the credits were rolling, so I had seen these characters before, they're the same actors who played the characters in the previous episode, the genetically engineered people, that is. One of them, who is the main character basically of this episode outside of Julian Bashir, is Serena, and Serena, I think is how she says her name, played by Faith Saley, who is someone that I recognize from her frequent appearances as a panelist on NPR's News Quiz, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And so she's a voice to me and not actually a person until I saw her in this, and I was like, oh, Faith Saley, that's right, she's also an actress who I did not realize had been in Deep Space Nine. So that was fun.
I did also see there was some interview with her where she said, oh, yes, this was a wonderful romance, and it was very sensitive with all the ways it approached things. And I thought, I don't want to disagree with the actress who was actually in the thing.
Well, yeah. I do think that the upside is that Serena, her character, is aware of what's happening. And because there's a line at the near the end where she says, you know, you save me, you, so I feel like I owe you whatever you want, which is on one hand understandable, but on the other hand, I think it is played to make Julian realize, oh, wait a second, maybe I've gone too far down this path of mine that has been I thought was good, but now hearing someone say that to you, you have to reassess what you've been doing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think I went and I actually read the script, like, with the annotations from the writer of how people should be thinking and behaving and whatever. And at least it was clear that that was intended then as the point of kind of realization that lasted all of 5 minutes.
That's true, because then at the end it does kind of undermine it. But we'll get to that.
We're jumping ahead because we're so excited to talk about such a... I'm trying to think of the appropriate word. I would say problematic, but I know lots of people hate the word problematic. So
it's got some issues. It's tried to... Well, so I think this is the grand history of Star Trek, in that it is attempting to deal with these big issues. And sometimes it does it well, and sometimes it's a bit ham-fisted. And it's also, as with all kinds of media, of its time, right? And so... if we think about it, when was this? Like 1998?
It's 99, I think. Wow.
It was first aired in 1998, apparently, according to Memory Alpha. But every time I think about how long ago things were, so it was 23 years ago, which makes me feel so old. Things were a little different. I mean, we weren't as aware of these issues. The issues still existed, let me be clear. They just were not really acknowledged. So I think that perhaps I can't go back in a time machine and figure out what people thought of this episode back then. I guess I could look for some reviews. But maybe it was, I don't think it was ahead of its time, but it was of its time, at least. If they were to redo this episode in like a Star Trek Discovery or Picard, it would be very different.
Yes, I think Julian would have lost his medical license.
That's true. And it's interesting because I was watching, we've been watching the Netflix series The Crown, which deals with the royal family of the United Kingdom and their very rosy and homey family life. And there's an episode where Princess Margaret is dealing with some mental health issues, and she does some research into her family, and it turns out that she's a bunch of cousins who were institutionalized because of their particular problems, and they didn't want them to be out in the public. And that made me think, I couldn't not think of that while watching this, because the characters, the genetically engineered humans, are basically institutionalized because they don't want them to be messing around with other people.
I mean, to be fair, in the previous episode, they did kind of try and negotiate a surrender to the Dominion. So,
yes, they need some supervision. But I did think about how, and I also thought, well, so this medical procedure that Dr. Bashir wants to perform on Serena, she is basically catatonic, and we find out that she's been genetically engineered, and generally, according to this episode and the episode before, when you are genetically engineered, it can either work out very well, like it did for Julian Bashir, or it can have unintended side effects, like it does for these folks. And her unintended side effect is the most problematic, because it is basically makes her catatonic. So she has her cerebral cortex or something can has a lot of bandwidth, but her visual and auditory senses cannot keep up with it. So they explain it as it's kind of out of phase. So she can't really interact with things that are happening around her. But she's certainly, the implication, at least to me, is that she's, you know, she's cognitively fine, but she just cannot communicate with folks. Which then led me to think, this is Star Trek. Couldn't they come up with some kind of neural interface that she could, you know, at least communicate with people? But apparently not. I don't know. But they can scan her brain very quickly. It's very confusing. But anyway, so Julie Bashir is like, I can fix her. And then I thought, well, if she can't communicate, how are you going to get her permission to try this untested medical procedure? But apparently she has legal guardianship with some doctor at the Institute, who is totally fine with Julie Bashir experimenting on her.
It does really seem that she is just being passed around through a variety of doctors, because yeah.
And now I should say, he cures her or whatever the right word is, like fixes the problem, and so she, at the end of the episode, she is stable, and stable in that she can interact with folks, and she seems like she will be able to be a productive member of society and live happily ever after without Julian Bashir. So it all works out in the end. But I thought it was a little troublesome that he would just you know, I know he's, it's coming from a place of genuine interest and wanting to help, but it feels like maybe he should have tried it on other people or other things, or tested it a couple times. I don't know.
I mean, he does kind of have form for hubris and generally God complex type behavior. So, you know, and as we say, it comes from a good place of wanting to help, because he's had dealings with these characters before, and she was the one that basically saved him or saved the day previously. So I think he feels some sort of empathy towards these people. And it's kind of unclear, like, they've all got, they're basically sort of very broad quirks, which is what's used to indicate some kind of neurodivergence, or however you wish to put it. I was not really sure about Lauren, who basically, she's sexually forward, so that means that she must have some problems. Yeah, so but I guess on the scale of things, that didn't bother me as much. But yeah, it's very kind of caricaturish. You know, like Jack is the one who's kind of like very quick to act and you know, sort of goes down these like massive tangents of there's too much mass in the universe and things like that, so they need to fix it, and they've only got 70. Trillion years to do so, or whatever. But
yes, and then there's Patrick, who is quiet, like a child. He's quiet and childish, I guess. Shy, maybe, is probably a good way to describe him, but maybe to a large degree. I don't know. Yeah, it's just the caricatures. Once you try to explain them, it becomes it highlights how ridiculous they are, because he is basically shy and Lauren is basically, she is, you know, like you said, sexually forward. And I guess one could argue she has fantasies, or she believes her fantasies, because she meets Nog once and she suddenly decides that he is very attractive, which is fine. Nog is very nice and attractive. But then she then is convinced that he is her boyfriend. And I don't think he is aware of this.
Yes.
So that might be the part where she tips over.
Also, well, Nog, I don't know how old Nog would be in this episode, but yes.
Well, he's an ensign, so he's probably of legal age for such things, if he were interested.
Yes. Well, they pretend to be admirals when they first come on board, so I think there's a conflict of interest there.
Oh, that's true. There is that part I found the most amusing is that their strategy was to be an admiral and his staff, and Patrick was the admiral, and they just trained him to answer any question by just saying, "That's a stupid question," and keep walking, and it worked incredibly well.
Yes. You know, Sisko is briefly in this at the beginning, because he pulls Bashir up on this, and he quite rightly points out that the last time they nearly caused a major incident, and he wants to press charges and whatever. And I kind of feel that he was in the right at that point.
Yes, because they're impersonating Starfleet officers. One assumes they got onto a starship and got to Deep Space Nine through lying. And Sisko's like, no, we shouldn't help these people. And Bashir's like, well, but I think this lady might be my girlfriend. So if I fix her, can I keep her? And Sisko's like, I don't know, that's kind of creepy, but as long as you keep them in the cargo bay.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. It's like, we'll set you up quarters in the cargo bay. Don't they have, like, quarters? Like,
they have lots of quarters.
Is it Deep Space Nine full that they couldn't spare? I guess it's because they want them all together and they want a nice space that they can film in. But I just find that line a bit strange. It's like, well, you can have them, but you know, you have to keep them in the garage, kind of.
That's right. We can't let them in the house, but they'll screw things up. And I thought maybe my headcanon for that moment is that they can watch them all together in the cargo bay and just have one set of security instead of having to worry about all the other people. Although they, at a later point in this episode, they just kind of walk out of the cargo bay and go looking for Bashir. So I don't even know what the security is doing, but
Well, I think the implication there was that they with their minds, they can break any kind of...
That's probably true. Yeah. What's the point? What's the point of keeping them in the cargo bay? So many questions for this episode. Episode, why don't you answer our questions? And so this is where we find out that, you know, Dr. Bashir has been working both on this virus thing and this experimental procedure to fix Serena. And the one thing he needs is an upgrade to his brain scanner, basically. There's lots of, I guess there's some neurocortical probe. There you are. I just happened to alight upon the name in Memory Alpha. And so he says, hey, Miles, can you fix this? Or not fix it, but upgrade it because it needs to have, you know, much better resolution. And Miles says, no, this is the best one we have. I can't break the laws of physics. And at this moment, I thought, why is he bothered? Now, Miles is very knowledgeable and a great character. One of my favorite characters. But Julian Bashir has on board the Deep Space Nine four super intelligent people who have been shown to be able to solve any number of problems almost immediately. So I thought, why even bother asking Miles when you have these people? And I guess it is to remind people who perhaps are not familiar with these characters that they can do things other people can't. And because Miles, who we know as, you know, regular viewers of Deep Space Nine, very smart, can fix anything. But he says, you know, you can't break the laws of physics. There's a limit to what I can do. And Jack is like, well, you can't break the laws of physics, but you can bend them. And we completely upgraded this for you immediately.
Yeah. I thought that was the point of bringing Miles in, so that you could set up that line about the breaking and bending. But
so they do it immediately. They add like some piping on it or something, and that solves the problem. And they can scan at a subatomic level, which is apparently what Bashir needs to do that. And so then there's this, you know, once again, this kind of trope of many hours of surgery, and they have like a little montage of who's doing a bunch of stuff. And then, was it successful? Oh no, it looks like maybe it was not, because she doesn't do anything other than her normal things. And so Bashir has to go drink his worries away.
With Ezri, his other potential conquest.
Yes. And then she gives him a kind of a little boost of reality. And she's like, you know, you did what you could, blah, blah, blah. And then he notices her being Serena in the promenade. So he goes out to see what she's doing. And she says, what are you looking at? He says to her, what are you looking at? And she says, everything. You go, oh, no. Not oh no, you go hooray, because it's good that she's able to talk. Now, they made an interesting choice here as well. Now, this also strikes me as kind of problematic, but I understand why they did it. But the way she talks is, I suppose, to show us that she's having trouble verbalizing, which I understand, but it just kind of made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to be going for a kind of... how somebody with hearing problems might talk or something like that. It was kind of like that. Given that I don't think we heard her say anything in the previous episode at all, I think it was... Yes, as you say, you can see why they did it.
Yes, and you also see why they did it, because they want to set up the scene where... Now, I don't think... Having her talk like that isn't a problem, but then it does bring up the scene where Jack makes fun of her for it, which I know was supposed to make you're not supposed to like Jack particularly, but then there's a lot of, it's very complicated, this whole thing, because you feel sympathy for Jack because he has this, you know, he didn't want to be genetically engineered, and now he's dealing with the repercussions of it, but then he's not particularly nice, and so it's very complicated. But anyway, they set it up so that he makes fun of her, but then he immediately, I don't know if he feels bad, but he sees it as a problem to solve, which is, I think, something that Jack likes, and that whole group is kind of, they are propelled by trying to solve problems. They may not be the problems people want them to solve, or they may not come up with the solutions that are what most people would agree are good solutions, but they like to solve problems. And so they think, we're going to solve this problem. And the way to solve this problem is by singing the scales. I don't know if that's actually scales. What is that called? Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti? I don't know what that is called, but that's what they sing.
The scale seems about right.
Oh, see?
And then it turns into a sort of improvised positively operatic performance. And I did write singing practice that goes on too long. I'm a bad person, but, you know, I was like, okay, I understand, I get it. And it, apparently it was very fun for them to film, apart from the actor who played Jack, who turned out to be completely, well, not completely, but tone deaf. And he was the only one that got overdubbed. And the rest of them, it was their natural performance.
Just so. Enjoying singing. And you could tell that they were having fun with that scene. But I do think that, yes, it goes on a little too long. But I think everybody who filmed it and was involved in it was just having so much fun with it and thought, this is a great scene. Maybe it's a little too long, but we don't care. We're going to keep it in.
Yes. We're a kind of show that's doing 26 episodes per season at this point. So
we can keep this in.
We'll keep this.
We're doing this show at the last season that focuses around Dr. Bashir as being lonely. So we've got time to film. And we even skipped over. There's a whole kind of montage at the beginning of this episode where we see Bashir basically going to all of his friends who are in relationships and like saying, hey, can you hang out with me? And they say, no, we're busy with, you know, our significant other or our other friends or people we like more than you. Just hammering into us that he is all alone. In case you didn't know.
Yes. Which entirely justifies all his actions, but not really at all.
That's right. If you're lonely, it's okay for you to basically attempt to guilt someone else into being in a relationship with you, is the lesson we learn by the end of this episode, which is not a lesson that I think anyone should learn and is not true. So if you're listening to me, if you come to Random Trek for some reason for relationship advice, here's my advice to you. Don't try to trick someone into being in a relationship with you because it will not work out, even if it's coming from good intentions. There you go. Yes.
And I mean, Serena does at this point, she breaks into Julian's cabin claiming that he only has a 6-digit
that's true.
Password. And I was like, do they still use like numbered digit passwords to get into rooms? Is that how it works?
I guess so, because Starfleet security is very poor anyway. So.
Well, we do know this. I mean, and she comes into his cabin and basically falls asleep on him in a way. And he's like, well, I want to do something here, but I'm just going to let her sleep. And
just the right choice. So this is one of those scenes that is both sweet and creepy all together. It's like it's sweepy or something because
I did write down, I have to say, Creep Space Nine.
So. Oh, see, there you go. Because it's like she is. For on the one hand, like she is, her entire life has just changed over the last, whatever, 10 hours or something like that. And she is dealing with a whole bunch of new sensory input that she has not dealt with before. And it's intense, one imagines. An intense experience. And she doesn't know a whole lot of people. She knows the three people that she's spent most of her life with. And she knows Julian Bashir. And this is another point of this episode that I find a little... It didn't sit well with me is that once she, you know, and I'm going to use this in quotes, once she is kind of normal, which is not how I normally would describe this, but in this, I think it kind of makes sense. She then suddenly decides, well, I don't want to really hang out with these people who I've been hanging out with for so long because they're kind of odd. And I was like, I don't know about this episode. Another thing I don't know about.
But she does fix his mutated virus problem and fixes him breakfast as well. So
yes, and hands him like a weird, like giant Pop-Tarty thing or something. I was trying to figure out what that was.
And he's like, great, I'll just walk down the corridor eating this. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And once again, though, she's, you know, I want to assume she's not used to these kinds of domestic moments. So she's kind of like, you have to have breakfast. So here you go. I made this, you know, shepherd's pie or something. I don't know what it is, but it didn't look particularly good is what I'm saying. And he solves the problem that she's working on. And then he's like, well, maybe we should go. He says, do you want to tour I have to go help this other doctor who apparently can't do anything without me, although we never meet her or him. I don't even know who Dr. Girardi is. Girardi, something like that. But another doctor on Deep Space Nine. Do you want to go, you know, have a tour with Esri or do something else? You shouldn't just hang out in my quarters all day. And she says, I want to go back to the cargo bay and hang out with the other folks. And this is where she is like, maybe I am not fitting in with these folks anymore, because she goes in and says, hey, what are you doing? And they're trying to make the universe weigh less because so it won't collapse in on itself, which, you know, seems like it could be a problem. And she decides that they are more comfortable with her in her old mode of just kind of sitting quietly and staring off into space and not actually, you know, having an opinion about anything, which leads to Dr. Bashir coming in to visit them and thinking, oh no, she has reverted back to her old self, and the operation or procedure, I don't know if it was an operation, has failed. Turns out she just doesn't want to talk to them.
Yeah. And so he asks her out to meet his, as we say in quotes, normal friends. Hmm,
exactly. That was the other thing I didn't like. He's like, well, let's leave these losers here and go meet some other people. That'll be a little more fun.
Yeah. And of course she gets the traditional makeover scene where mm-hmm. she emerges from her cocoon, whatever. And
I thought she looked fine before. I didn't think she looked all that much different afterwards, so I was very confused.
I think she doesn't have quite as many circles around her eyes as the main thing, and she had a slightly different outfit, but yeah. But everybody reacts as if, you know, she has had this sort of princess makeover. Mm-hmm.
Which leads to the moment where what Miles says, I didn't realize she was so... dot, dot, dot. And then Odo says, beautiful. I was like, oh, Deep Space Nine, did you need this in here?
Yeah. Because, of course, she's only valuable for how she looks.
Exactly.
I know it sounds like we are complaining about every single old trope or whatever in this episode, but this episode deserves it. And if it's your favorite episode, I apologize to you, but you're wrong.
Yes, that's the random Trek spirit. So this, but it is basically like a truckload of tropes that is kind of glued together. And I understand what it's trying to do. And I think by the end, except for the whole undermining by Miles of, well, you were lonely, it almost does what it wants to do, because it does, by the end, she gets to make her own decisions. And, you know, Julian almost understands what he has done.
He almost learns from the experience.
Exactly. So close.
But yeah, so there's the line about, you know, she's not going to go back to the Institute, or where's she going to go? And he was like, why does she have to go anywhere at all? Mm.
And, well, maybe she should make that decision, Julian.
But then he just kisses her. And the thing that I read, which was interesting, was the scene where they kiss was apparently reshot a month later after the filming of this, because the original scene was deemed to show Bashir being a bit too predatory towards her. And I was like, well, if this is the reshot scene.
It does seem kind of strange. I mean, I will say that I would have made that scene, if I were in charge of Deep Space Nine, and I'll never be in charge of any TV show, so who knows what I know, right? But I would have thought it would be better if she were the one to have initiated the kiss. I think that still would have been a little problematic because of their whole power dynamic, but I think it would have been better than him initiating the kiss, which is what he does.
And then he's like, I was thinking we might go to Risa for a week or whatever. Yeah, I was just like, what? I'm just going to take you to the sex planet, if that's okay.
I wrote down that Risa is not a good destination for your second date. It seems like you're going too fast if you're just going right to Risa. No judgment there. If everybody's okay with it, I suppose it's fine. But this person is basically like she's
effectively a child, because exactly. she's like, she might be super intelligent, but she's had no emotional development for her 20, whatever, 30 years. And, you know, she's had one kiss. And now suddenly he's like, yeah, I know this place called Risa. I think you might like it.
It's a pleasure planet. It's great. Now, one assumes that maybe there are things other to do on Risa than just have sex all the time. But everything else that we've seen of Risa, except for when Worf went there and he had to thwart a terrorist plot, leads me to believe it's mostly just sex everywhere.
I mean, I imagine there are people that go there and there's like golf courses or something, but...
Naked golf, though, only.
Yes.
And I'm no prude, so I'm all about, you know, go to Risa and have fun, but maybe not with the person who is just had her first kiss with the doctor who thinks that she is the woman of his dreams that he's been... I think there is a line where he says, I have been waiting for this woman for my entire life. And I'm like, well, they're putting a lot of pressure on her. A, and B, she is a fully realized person of her own. Like, she doesn't, she's not a story in your, a character in your story. She is a person.
And Miles does try and do a bit of voice of reason, and it's like, well, you know, she's your patient. And he's like, ah, well, she's not, because I've just like handed her over to somebody else, so it's all fine.
This is totally fine, Miles. It's totally fine.
Yes, I consulted the Starfleet guidelines for these situations. And it,
that's right. By the letter of the law, I am breaking no regulations. Yes,
admittedly, I kissed her before I made that decision, but yeah.
But what doctor? Who hasn't been kissed by their doctor?
I think Miles just does give her a good luck, gives him a good luck in a kind of, you know, rather than doubling down on the, you know, if you persist in this, I'm going to have to report you to Cisco because this is bad. And they're supposed to have a date in his quarters, of course, and she doesn't appear. So he goes to her place and just overrides the door lock and just goes in. And
I
says,
think that's inappropriate.
I'm not going to give up on you ever.
Kind of creepy. Yeah, and he doesn't, I guess one could say, all right, well, maybe it was a medical emergency, so he was concerned about her. But I would have, once again, a slight tweak to, because he basically just says, override Bashir, whatever, 358, which leads me to believe Julian Bashir can just go into anyone's office, quarters if he wants. I would have just made a thing where you say, you know, medical emergency. Chief medical officer override 381. And then you think, okay, well.
Yes, he's kind of, there's a medical emergency with my girlfriend. but, and you know, he goes back to the others and sort of they say, we'll figure out what's wrong here. And of course, she can still talk. She's just afraid of the relationship and was trying her playing possum trick again, mm-hmm. pretty much. And he's like, comes and he's like, I love you. I love you. Do you love me?
You have to tell me.
Yes.
And I wrote down, already in love. Goodness. I mean, Julian, I know you're lonely from the first 3 minutes of this episode, but you're going so fast, man. Maybe yes. This is why you haven't found someone.
I mean, she says, I don't even understand what love is. I would argue, neither does he.
I think it is true. If we learned anything, Julian has some issues that he needs to explore, I think. And not just based on this episode. It's every one of his relationships seems to be a little problematic.
Yes. And I mean, he's like, I want to make you happy and all this. And she's just like in tears apologizing to him, saying, I wish I could be the woman you want me to be. So he just goes off and arranges an internship for her and sticks her on a shuttle.
Says, good luck. You'll be living with this random person I know's family.
I've passed you on to another doctor or whatever.
But he already has a family, so he's not lonely, so he'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is that sort of realization at the end that he was actually behaving terribly. And you know, he kind of says, oh, you know, she's leaving on a shuttle in 3 minutes. And then the implication being that he wasn't going to go and say anything to her or whatever.
I guess so. It does seem weird that you wouldn't just say goodbye to her, at least.
Yes. But
and he does.
He goes and he, you know, says that she repeats the line about, you know, sort of going out and making a place for herself or whatever the line was. And he goes back to confiding in Miles again, and you know, Miles invites him round for tempura without checking with Keiko whether it's okay to have somebody else. But you know,
Miles does that pretty frequently.
And he says, like, I will never forget her until like two or three episodes later. I can't remember.
But he's genetically enhanced as well, so he can't, literally, he cannot forget her.
Yes, by the letter of the law, he will never forget her. But
that's right. Yeah, and that's that scene where Bashir and Miles are talking. Miles has come for tempura, and he says, you know, sure, you were creepy, but you were lonely. So, you know, we do weird things when we're lonely.
Yeah. And I went back and I was like looking at the list of Bashir's relationships. And there was the other one with the woman who had to be in the gravity chair something like that, who he tries to fix in order to...
He is attracted to projects, I think, that he feels like, I can fix you. I can... So because he gets the... as we said, you said earlier, he kind of has a little god complex. And so he's like, I must be with someone who needs me in that way. And I can, you know, take pleasure in fixing their problems.
Yeah, I mean, at least in this, he was trying to make an equal, but unfortunately he made an equal who then didn't actually want to be with him.
Which is problematic. And he does, I will give him this, because I know we've been rough on Bashir in this episode, for good reason, I think. I'm not making any excuses for Bashir, because I think he did a lot of questionable things in this episode. But by the end, I think he almost realizes what's going on. And even though I don't think he fully realizes the root of the problem, he doesn't, one could see him trying to kind of guilt her into staying or kind of force her somehow to not be able to go somewhere else, but he doesn't, and he helps her try to make a life somewhere else. So that's good.
I think the problem with this, the problem I had with it at the end of the episode was I think the episode was wanting us to feel sorry for him. You know, yes. It's like, oh, poor Bashir, you know, unlucky in love again. And it's like, no, have you not been watching this episode that you wrote and filmed?
That's he not... got what he deserved.
Yes, he is lucky that he still has a job.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I feel bad for the other four genetically engineered people, not Julian Bashir, who, you know, has all of these opportunities that they did not get and still uses them.
And the other three just get shipped off without even a scene to say goodbye to them.
I know he doesn't say goodbye. They're like, oh, where are they? Oh, they're back at the Institute. Well,
I sent them away. They were of no use to me anymore.
They fulfilled their purpose. Goodbye. Yes.
So we never got any closure, really, on that side of it. And yes, I thought it was a terrible way of treating them, like, you know... yeah, goodbye. And the episode doesn't even show them leaving.
Nope. So, yeah, it's so this episode, in a nutshell, is, well, I hesitate to say it's bad because it is almost good.
I mean, I think the episode knew, like, or the writers knew and intended for it to be a moral journey for Bashir where he realizes at the end that he did a bad thing. And, you know, perhaps in 1998 or whenever, this was a step forward of like, oh, you mean doctors should not date their childlike patients.
Who knew?
Yes, I mean, yeah, we're looking back at it now from our 2021 perspective, where we definitely know that that's a bad thing. But yeah, I kind of looked around and the opinions on the internet seemed to be quite split. And there was, you know, people saying this was awful and people saying, oh, this was a touching love story.
I don't understand how anyone could watch this and think it's a touching love story.
Yes. I like the some of the basic ideas of, you know, the her being sort of unlocked from this and having this sort of rapid emotional journey and turmoil and all that sort of stuff. I think there's something interesting in there. The whole kind of like, well, we'll just fix everyone and that will make them better people is difficult by itself, I think. And then, you know, well, they're of no good, so we'll just ship them all back. And
send them back to their institute.
One escaped, but that's fine.
Yeah, I think that this is the grand tradition of the Star Trek episode. So sometimes, you know, Star Trek, not all the time, but a lot, the most memorable episodes of Star Trek are the ones where they're dealing with these huge issues. And, you know, you can deal with them in a science fiction show a little more broadly and a little more easily because it is fictionalized in like a different world, right? So you can kind of... make it a little more straightforward and deal with these big things. And so the most successful Star Trek episodes, I think, are the ones where they kind of knock it out of the park and they are dealing with these huge issues in and making, you know, very important points. And that's why we all love, well, part of the reason why we love Star Trek. And when you're doing that, sometimes you don't succeed. And I think that this is an episode that just didn't succeed. It didn't. It wasn't a home run to now mix in a sports metaphor for some reason. But it wasn't. I appreciate what it was trying to do, but I think ultimately it failed.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that. I mean, I like Bashir. He's one of my favorite characters on the show, and his interactions with Garak, particularly, I think, are some of my favorite moments in it. And, you know, he started out being kind of just a bit of a wet blanket slash sex pest. And, you know, that's unfair. But, you know, he is kind of like very early on. He's kind of throwing himself at Jadzia and various people along the way. But his character becomes far more interesting. And I think there's some of it in this, you know, where he's kind of the more, you know, he talks about how he basically had to hide himself for most of his life and things like that. And I think Alexander Siddig is a very good actor. And I like the version of the character that he's playing more towards the end of the series, where he's having these kind of, you know, he is the hero of his story in some ways more than he was at the beginning. But this particular episode kind of felt like a throwback to some of those earlier ones. And
yes,
that it did, it, you know, in a season, as we were saying, it was very much had kind of taken the Deep Space Nine serial storyline thing, the arc, I should say. And this, you know, could have fitted in pretty much anywhere. You know, you just need to change a few lines here and there, and you could have had it in probably any season at all.
Yes.
The random number generator of Random Trek gave me a classic. I mean, the thing was, like, I was interested to go back and, as we were saying at the start, to go back and see this, because I remembered it as being a vaguely interesting episode. And then it was just sort of like, oh no.
Yeah, it's one of those times where you think, oh, I remember that episode. It was really good and said some interesting things. And then you watch it and you're like, maybe not. Plus, I think that there's a difference when you're watching it and you know you're going to talk about it. So you're watching it with a more critical eye, at least speaking for myself. So
yeah, no, I think that's the same. It's like I watched the episode and I realized, well, this is not something that I can just kind of like, we'll just gloss over some of the issues in this episode, I think, because the whole episode is one large problem.
Well, thank you, James, for joining me to talk about a complicated episode of Deep Space Nine. I was trying to think of the right word there. I think complicated is a good word.
Yeah, and I apologize to people if I did not say the right thing, and I apologize to people who love the episode, because I feel I will have annoyed a wide spectrum of people. I mean, I would say the one thing to take from this, I think, is, you know, if we're looking back at an episode like this and going, oh, this is, you know, there's some deeply problematic ideas in this and so on, it means that we as a society and us personally are kind of moving, changing, whatever. Because I'm sure when we watched it originally, we were like, oh, what a lovely romantic story.
That Dr. Bashir is so sweet. I hope he finds somebody.
Yes. I hope he gets to sleep with at least half of Jadzia Dax.
That's right.